Got very funny. Hello, Rabbi Neftali. Long time no see.
Right. And hi, Chesed, and Naomi, and Eleanor, and Eve. So, and Jeffrey, and Matityahu. And Matityahu in Israel. Matityahu here is in Israel. Meta. Now, so now this text is, it's about Isaac. And one second, just wait till we can see it together. Okay, we've come back. It froze for a second, but I think you're able to see it.
Is yes. That-
Yes. Okay. Love.
All good.
Right. So here we have a situation where Isaac Yitzchak has been in the territory of Abimelech, which is king of the Philistines, right? The Plishtim. That's the origin of the term Palestine, actually. These Philistines. And the point being that Isaac, there was a famine in the land, and Isaac thought he would go out of the land of Israel, the Holy Land of Israel. He thought that he would go down to Egypt because of a famine. Let's just see this. There was a famine in the land, aside from the previous famine, right? Vayhi rav ba'aretz, milvad harav harishon, apart from the previous famine, asher haya b'nei Avraham, which was in the days of Abraham, vayelech Yitzchak el Avimelech, melech plishtim chara. And Yitzchak went to Avimelech, the king of the Philistines, in a place called Gra. Now, vayera elav Hashem. Now, going to the king of the Philistines in Gra, that is the Philistine stronghold was Ashkelon, a bit north of Gaza. And he thought he would go further south into Egypt. Vayera lav Hashem, but God appeared to him. Vayomer, and he said, Al tered Mitzrayim, don't go down to Egypt. Shchom ba'aretz asher omar alecha. Stay in the land which I'm telling you. Gur ba'aretz hazot, dwell in this land. Ve'eye imcha v'avarecheka, and I will be with you and I'll bless you. Ki lecha olezarecha, because to you and your children, your descendants, etein et kol ha'aretzot ha'el, I will give all these lands. That's the land of Israel and those surrounding areas which are all part of Israel. V'hakimoti et hashua, and I will keep my oath, asher nishbati l'Avraham avicha, which I made to Abraham your father, that I would give him this land. V'hirbeti et zaracha, and I'll increase your children, v'chochvei hashamayim, like the stars of heaven. V'natati l'zaracha, and I'll give your children et kol ha'aratzot ha'el, all these lands. V'hit barachu v'zaracha, and there will be blessed through your children, called goyei haaretz, all nations of the earth. Now, here the translation follows a particular interpretation, but in fact, the Hebrew text means that the nations of the earth will be blessed through your children. The Jewish people bring blessing into the world. Since Abraham listened to my voice, he guarded what I said to God, mitzvotai, my commandments, chukotai, my statutes, v'torotai, my teachings. And so Yitzhak stayed in Gra rather than going down to Egypt. So he followed this divine instruction, and Gra is part of the future land of Israel. Now, then let's just go a little bit further. So Yitzhak is here in Gra, and here we come to the key sentences for this particular teaching. Vayizra Yitzhak ba'aretz hayi. Isaac sowed grain in that land. Vayimtza bashanahi, and he found in that land Meya sha'arim, 100-fold. In other words, he reaped 100-fold, as it has in the translation here. Vayivarecheu Hashem, and God blessed him. So we have two aspects, that Isaac sowed in that land, sowed grain, and in that year, it produced 100-fold what he would have expected it to produce. Vayivarecheu Hashem, and God blessed him. And and then it says, Vayigdal ha'ish, that's Isaac, became great. Vayelech haloch v'gadel, and he became greater and greater, ad ki gadal me'od, till he became very, very great. Now here the translation says he grew richer and richer. And from the context, that's what it seems to be talking about. But in fact, the Hebrew doesn't say that he got richer. It said he became greater. He became greater, and he got greater and greater, and then he became very great. Now, what the discourse, which was said in 1966, is going to explain that we're not just talking about physical crops here. We're talking about a kind of a spiritual produce. And that spiritual produce is something very important for us, especially in our present embattled situation, where not only in Hamas has attacked us, but many fellow travelers with Hamas in Britain, in America, in Spain, and many other places around the world. And here we have to remember and focus on our spiritual power and our spiritual heritage, and the fact that our spiritual heritage integrally includes the land of Israel, as we see in these verses that we've just been reading. So we're going to stop sharing this, and we're going to, hi Sarah, and we are going to find the discourse. And meanwhile, we will have the melody of the discourse. Oh, yeah, ya 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 mama yo ya yo. Hi Maureen and Steve, great seeing you. Ha yere damba, ha yere damba yo mba ho. Ya ye ye yamba yamba yo. Ha yere damba yamba yo. Ha ye ye yamba, ha ye ye yamba, ho yamba ya re damba, ha yamba ya ye yamba, ho ye ya ho ye ya yum. Can you see the Hebrew text of the discourse? Oh ho ya bamba ya 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 ya. Ha ya 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 Right. So here we have the discourse. Isaac sowed grain in the ground, in that land. And he found that that year, 100-fold. It grew 100 times what was expected. And God blessed it. So the discourse asks, we need to understand. The fact it says God blessed him, after it tells us that he found 100-fold grain, it implies that this is something, a second blessing. When it says that God blessed him, it's something extra to him having 100-fold grain. And we need to understand exactly what that means. Now, the fact that he had 100-fold grain, that itself is a miraculous thing. And so that is obviously a special divine blessing. So that itself is an intriguing thing. So we have this idea that at first he gets an extraordinary blessing that 100-fold grows. And then there is a further blessing as well. And then the verse goes on to say, Vayigdal ha'ish, the man grew, Vayelech haloch v'gadel, he became greater and greater, Ad ki godal me'od, till he became very great. So this idea of him becoming very great, so at first sight, it seems that it's talking about the harvest. But when it says that he found 100-fold, so that means there was a tremendous amount in the harvest. And then God blessed him. You could say he sold the produce and he made a lot of money from it, right? So that's a very material way of explaining it. Now, even though, now here we have an interesting perspective. Vahagam, even though, shekol inyanei ha'avot, everything to do with the patriarchs, are in fact unyanim ruchaniyim, spiritual things. So even if we're talking about the harvest that Isaac reaped, that itself is a spiritual thing. And so when it says that he found 100-fold and God blessed him, they are about the spiritual dimension of his harvest. But nonetheless, that seems only to be connected with the harvest. But when it says that Isaac became greater and greater, that seems to imply there's something more to this. Even if you want to say that for Isaac or Abraham, the patriarchs, when they grew food in the harvest, that was also something spiritual. But what further dimension? It implies a further dimension. So the Rebbe is going to explain this according to a midrash, which says, Ba Yitzchak, when Isaac came, Af hu heyir, he illuminated everywhere. It was a radiance which shone. As it says, O Zahua Latzadik, light is planted for the righteous man. And it says, Yitzhak planted. So what is he planting? He's planting light. He's planting radiance. And it's radiance which is going to grow from this planting. And that means he is planting this Or Zahua LaTzadik, the light, the radiance which is planted for the tzaddik. Now the tzaddik means the righteous man or woman. And it's a spiritual quality. Being a tzaddik, being having a person who's transformed their physicality into a direct connection with the divine. And so Isaac here and his wife Rebecca Incidentally, because Isaac was holy, especially holy, even among the patriarchs, that's why he couldn't leave the land of Israel, and also why he couldn't have more than one wife. The other patriarchs, Abraham before him and Jacob after him, had more than one wife, but Isaac only married Rebekah because of his extra special sanctity, because he had been put on the altar to be offered to God. And then an angel said to Abraham, offer a ram instead. But that still gives Isaac a special quality. And part of that special quality is that he couldn't leave the land of Israel. And another part is that he had one wife, Rebekah, and she was his wife all the way through, and there was no other wife. So what is this? Now we're going to try to understand from a variety of comments by the sages in different books, printed, written, compiled at different times. What does it mean, this sowing of the light, this planting of the light? Now there is a very remarkable book, Tana de Bei Eliyahu. This is a kind of midrash. And the tradition about this book is that it's dictated by Elijah the prophet. It's an extremely mystical text. It's very often read. It's not an esoteric text. But the tradition about it is that it derives from Elijah the prophet. So it says on this verse, Ein Tria Elat Tzedaka. When it says planting, it means charity. As there's another verse, plant for yourselves charity. So what that means is not only actual giving of charity, but all mitzvot are called charity. As it says in a verse, it's talking about, you see, charity, the word charity in Hebrew, it's tzedakah, which means righteousness. And there are many kinds of righteousness. So an aspect of righteousness is a woman lighting candles for Shabbat, a man putting on tefillin in the weekday. So these are aspects of righteousness. And so they are also called tzedakah, which literally means charity. And also, Torah itself is called planting. As it says, Sheish shanim tizra sadecha. For 6 years, you should plant your field. Now, the Midrash says, Heim shital sidrei Mishnah. What are these 6 years? The six orders of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the central text of the oral law. So I have here a volume of Mishnah, which maybe you're able to see. So this is the, it's quite a small volume, and it's got inside, I'm not sure if you're able to see. So in the middle is the text of the Mishnah, and around it are commentaries by the various commentators on the Mishnah. One is Bar Tanura, Rabbi Avadya Bar Tanura. The other is selections from a commentary by Rabbi Yom Tov Lipman Heller. So this small book is the Mishnah, and then it's expanded by discussion into the many volumes of the Talmud. But this Mishnah has basically got six sections inside it. There are six orders of the Mishnah. So when it says that for 6 years you should plant your field, that means the six orders of the Mishnah. So in other words, it's not talking about planting a field, it's talking about studying Torah. And that's what it means, that when Yitzhak sowed this light, he is planting this light. It's the light of Torah and of mitzvot, which is sown, which is enclosed, in the physical things of this world. Let's try to understand this image. When we fulfill a mitzvah of the Torah, let's say on the one hand, putting on tefillin for a man, lighting Shabbat candles for a woman. So each of these activities, or it could be the giving of tzedakah, giving charity, physically giving some money to a poor person or to an important cause to help Israel, something like that. Or it could be the study of Torah, taking a book of Torah and studying it, or looking it up on the web and studying something. Now, all of these are actions which are involved with the physicality of the world. And so what is happening is that the radiance of Torah mitzvah are enclosed in the physicality of the world, whether it is in the candles, the action of lighting the Shabbat candles or the tefillin or studying Torah or giving money in charity. There is a radiance which is enclosed in physicality. And so then we can understand. Now, according to this, we can explain why, through the fact that Isaac made this great effort of planting, he became greater and greater and greater. It's not just that he made a lot of crops, a lot of corn grew, and even as some commentators say, and he sold the corn and made a lot of money. It's not just that. It's talking about the fact that he himself becomes a greater person in spiritual terms, because this is service of studying Torah and keeping mitzvah. That is something which reaches the deepest and deepest part of a person. And the very fact that in this time of tremendous crisis in Israel and around the world, many, many people in the Israeli army, in the IDF, and other people in Israel and around the world as well, have had an upsurge of keeping of mitzvah. Many sets of tzitzit, of the fringes, the fringe garment that a man is supposed to wear, have been sent to the soldiers in the army. Many pairs of tefillin. This upsurge of mitzvah, that is something which is the deep grandeur of the Jewish people, because that is the point which connects us like a lifeline to God, the creator of the universe. And that is our true reality. We are here in this world as emissaries of the divine, with the task and the goal to create a dwelling place for the divine in this world. And the Torah depicts what this dwelling place is supposed to be like. It's like the Garden of Eden. It is a beautiful dwelling place. And that is what we have to try to establish. And the way we establish it are through the mitzvot, the laws of the Torah in daily life. So according to this, we can say, says the discourse, that when it says it grew 100-fold, and also he was blessed by God. So those two are talking not only about crops, but talking about something spiritual. So it's all talking about something spiritual, and it is the way in which Isaac invested himself in this bond with God, which is represented by Torah and mitzvah, and in that way he achieved a tremendous flourishing. And I'm quite sure if Isaac invested himself in it, his wife Rebecca did as well, Rivka. And so it is something they were both doing, heavily invested in Torah and mitzvah in the land of the Philistines, but it is still part of the land of Israel. It's like a suburb. It's an area of the land of Israel. It's not considered outside Israel. Egypt, that would be somewhere outside Israel. But the land of the Philistines, which is where they are, the land of Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, the original Palestinians, that is really a part of Israel itself. Now, let me just stop sharing so that we can see that we're all on the page together. Hi, Gloria. It's nice seeing you. So are there any comments at this point? And Michelle, thank you for coming. Yeah, I saw your email. Yeah. Any comment? Is it all clear that we're talking about this spiritual effort of Isaac? And that is really... Yes?
I can't come onto screen, but I really love what you're talking about, the planting of the seeds and the light. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so if there anyone else has any comment or question, it's all right. Okay, so let's go back into the text. Vihine. Now, behold, bevoa bechama mekomot. It explains in several places that the fact that the Torah mitzvot are called planting, this is talking about the way, as we just mentioned, the way that Torah and mitzvah descend to being clothed in physical things, right? So Torah and mitzvah, as we said a minute ago, they are involved with physical things, the physical candles to light the Shabbat candles, the physical tefillin to wear tefillin, the physical money to give charity, the book or the speaking which is there when we're learning Torah, or the computer screen if we're learning Torah from computer, or iPhone or whatever it might be, or iPad. Now, that descent of Torah mitzvah into this physical domain is in order to rise. Now, this is a Kabbalistic and Hasidic principle which has tremendous power. The idea that every descent going down is in order to rise, to grow, to go up. And it's almost as if this is a general principle throughout life, that when there is a descent, in whatever way, as tragically it was on October the 7th, the ultimate divine purpose is that it should be an elevation. And the greater the descent, the greater the elevation. Now, so therefore the idea that Torah and mitzvah come down into our physical world and become part of our physical lives, that is in order that there should be a great elevation, a great ascent, like the planting of a seed in the ground, which is in order that from that seed or those seeds, you put some seeds in the ground, and then there's crops which grow, or whatever it is that you're planting, it grows, it flourishes in an exponential way. Now, what exactly is being planted when we talk about the planting of Torah and mitzvah? Does it mean God is planting Torah and mitzvah, that God brings the Torah down into this world and the mitzvah? You know, the Talmud has a beautiful discussion between Moses, God, and the angels. When Moses was on Mount Sinai, ready to receive the Torah, and the angel said, "What is this human being doing here?" And God said, "He's come to get the Torah." And the angel said, "What? You're going to let the Torah go down into the world? How can you do that?" And there's a whole beautiful discussion. And the idea, so that's the suggestion, that from the divine point of view, the Torah is being sent down into the world. So it's God planting the Torah. However, from what we are reading here about Isaac planting, It's the person keeping the Torah who is planting the Torah. It's not that God is not only, that's another interpretation, another aspect of the whole idea, is that God takes his holy Torah and puts it down into this physical world so that we physical human beings are able to relate to the Torah. So that's one aspect. But from this verse where it says that Isaac sowed and he gained this tremendous produce, 100-fold and more. So when we keep the Torah, there's some sense in which something is going down in order to rise. So that is, now we have a very interesting image here. The Inyan Hazriah, the idea of the planting on the personal level in which each one of us is doing the planting ourselves. It is to sow in our animal soul, right? We've got, let's just give this a little bit of an introduction. Each of us has got what is called an animal soul or a vital soul. It means the same thing. That is the energy that we have inside us, which makes us want to live and want to eat and want to procreate and gain things and sometimes to fight and do all kinds of different things in a materialistic way. That's the animal soul. We also have a divine soul. The divine soul wants to connect with the divine. The divine soul wants to connect with Torah, with mitzvot. And the divine soul is very pure. The animal soul is involved in earthly, material, carnal things. So what is the sowing? Now here we come to a very Hasidic concept, because it would be quite easy to imagine that since we've got this sort of divided self, there's the animal soul, which goes together with the body, incidentally, and the divine soul. So let's divide up. The animal soul is dealing with eating and drinking and sort of surviving. The divine soul serves God, right? That would be an easy way to think about it. The Hasidic special point that Hasidism makes is don't be a divided soul. Be a unified person. And the unified person means that the divine soul impregnates the animal soul. And so here we have this phrase, the idea, the Inyan Hazriah, the idea of the planting, Hu Lizra B'Nefsha B'Amit, is to plant in the animal soul Hamshachat Seichel U'Midot, a flow of intellect and emotion, pure spiritual intellect and emotion, shonef shelakit, from the divine soul. Sha'al yedezen, through that, na'aset smichav aliyah, there is a planting and a growing, baseichel v'hamidot, in the mind, in the intellect, and the emotions, the nefesh shelakit, of the divine soul itself. So in other words, we are an area where this interaction is taking place. Inside of each of us is this animal soul, and it's a fecund, fertile area for the divine soul to plant itself, to plant its intellect, that the divine soul gets the animal soul to think about something. As we're doing this second, we're trying to understand this discourse together. It's a subtle thing where the wheels of our minds are rotating, so to speak. And it's our animal intellect. It's the same intellect which is able to build a bridge or fly a plane. We can do all kinds of things with our minds, with our animal intellect. We are We're human beings. We've got very complex minds which can achieve all kinds of things. In that animal soul intellect is now being implanted divine intellect of a divine teaching, starting with the Torah and a verse in the Torah. And what does it mean? And what does the Midrash say? And what do Hasidic teachings say? What does Kabbalah say? And so on. So we're impregnating the animal soul with the intellect of the divine soul. Now, there's also another dimension. It's the emotions. Now, it's possible that we can learn these teachings in a kind of cerebral way. And it's also possible to take them in a more emotional way and be inspired by them. And then that inspiration is not only an inspiration of the divine soul, it becomes the inspiration of the animal soul as well. And you know, when the animal soul is inspired by godly concepts, by divine concepts, and its mind is filled with the divine wisdom, a godly wisdom, then it is really reaching its ultimate purpose, that it is not intended to be a separate, lowly thing, the animal soul and the body. It's something very holy and exalted. And here we're going to find out a little bit more about this animal soul. Now, the Kevan, let's take this slowly because it's saying very profound things, and let's try not to miss it. Since the root of the animal soul, who lema'ala, is higher mehashoresh than the root, the nefesh elokit, of the divine soul. So the divine soul is at a certain level of holiness, right? We've been talking about the divine soul is holy. The animal soul is involved with food and drink and so on, which is surely less holy. But no, here it's saying, the divine soul is at a certain level of holiness and the animal soul is higher up. Why is it higher up? The nefesh elokit shorsha b'tikun. The divine soul's root is in the world of tikun, the world of repair. The nefesh bahamit and the animal soul, shorsha b'tohu. The root of the animal soul is in what's called the world of chaos. Now, in the Lurianic description of the existence or the coming into existence of the world, he describes the process of creation as having several stages. And there was a certain stage where there was a very, very intense radiance, an intense divine radiance, which tried to enter the vessels, like the vessels of the Sfirah, but the radiance was too intense. And so there was what's called the breaking of the vessels, Shvirat HaKelim, the breaking of the vessels. And that became the source for many kinds of negativity, including the aspect of the animal soul, that the animal soul can dig deep into very inappropriate kinds of behavior. But nonetheless, that is because of this catastrophe at the beginning of the breaking of the vessel with this intense radiance. But actually, the inner reality of the animal soul is that intense radiance, which is higher than the divine soul. Lachain, therefore, al yedei sriat haseichel umidot, by sowing, by planting the mind and the emotions of the divine soul into the animal soul, there is, and the animal soul has got this tremendous possibility because it's got this chaotic, intense radiance. So that intense radiance then flows into the divine soul. Na'aset nicha and aliyah b'nefesh elokit. The divine soul rises and flourishes because of that. Now, let's just look at each other to try and see if we can understand what it's describing. So in other words, there is a tremendously significant interaction taking place within us. There's our animal soul, which is full of a very, very deep energy. And it's because that energy is so strong that if it behaves in an unbounded way, it can be dangerous and problematic. So that's why we have to control our animal soul. Otherwise, it can do all kinds of negative things. But that being so, that the animal soul has got this intensity within it, this leads to the idea that when the divine soul integrates with the animal soul and it injects its wisdom, its divine sensitivity and wisdom, and its divine inspiration and feeling and love and awe into the animal soul, then it draws from the intense energy which is in the animal soul, and because of that, it flourishes in a most beautiful way. The divine soul flourishes. Now, this reminds me of something that happened a few days ago. I was in New York for the gathering of Shluchim. There was an amazing event with something like 4,000 Chabad emissaries from all over the world coming together. And it was an extremely moving and powerful experience, especially since it was very much linked with the events in Israel. And there was a banquet which took place simultaneously in New York and in Israel, and were linked visually by video, and were sharing. A person gave a speech in one place which could be heard in both places, and then someone else spoke from Israel. It was a very, very moving event. Now, at that event, so at some other opportunity at some point, someone whom I didn't know, he was in a conversation with another person, and he laughed. He laughed in a way which to me indicated exactly what we're studying at this moment, the idea of an integration within him. That, if you could put it that way, as we're learning, the divine and the animal integrated. And with that, he was laughing. And you could feel the wholesomeness, the reality of that law. So I turned to him and I said, you know what? I could write an article about your law. Later on, he met one of my sons. He told him that. But that's, this discourse is exactly explaining this point, that the animal side of the person and the divine side, rather than be split apart, which is the way that some religious movements in Judaism would like to depict it. You've got to be holy, you've got to learn Torah, you've got to do mitzvah, forget about the rest. But Hasidism tries to draw these elements together. And in fact, it's presenting the idea that when the divine is invested in the animal dimension, it's enriched by itself, because the animal dimension has got this tremendous sacred power, the power of the world of chaos, an intense, unruly power, which is there in the animal, and which, when the divine soul interacts and integrates with it, the divine soul itself is able to benefit. Okay, so are there any points that anyone would like to raise? It's any question? It's all making sense, hopefully. Oh, Agnes, you want to say?
No, there is an analogy here. which I shall share with you, and maybe you might, will not find it relevant, and people who are not mathematically or physically inclined will find it alien. It reminds me, what you have just said, of modulation theory. In modulation theory, when you are sending signal from one place to another, the signal itself is usually at high frequencies, and it has not enough energy to travel itself. And the carrier frequency is used, which is a much lower frequency, but has much greater energy. And the carrier frequency is modulated by the high frequency signal, and that is the way in which you can communicate at a distance. And I know that you would understand this because you were trained as a physicist. So I wonder whether you find this at all relevant as a possible analogy to what you have just said.
I think that's absolutely beautiful, Agnes. I think that's an absolutely beautiful point. And I would suggest that the kind of model that is being described here in fact is seen in many aspects of existence, and you have produced this very interesting one of modulation theory. But I would suspect that it's there, it's probably in biology and in other aspects of science. And I thank you very, very much for presenting that. I think that's a very beautiful image. And thank you very much indeed. And I'm glad that you shared that. Very, very glad. Yes. Agnes is a professor of engineering, incidentally. So
once upon a time.
Well, yeah. Agnes, once a professor, always a professor. Professor Emeritus.
Thank you.
Right, okay. Now we're going to consider the soul and the struggle, the purpose, the goals of our soul, our divine soul. Vayinyanhu, now the matter is as follows, that in the service of the soul, there are two aspects. One is the service of the soul in itself, and the second is its role in transforming the animal soul. So the divine soul comes into the world. It's born inside us. It's there. We come into the world as a little baby. We grow. And we've got this divine soul. And the divine soul has two areas of development. One is in itself, and the other is the task to transform the animal soul. Now, when it says the animal soul, incidentally, all the animal souls connect together. And ultimately, they connect with the whole of existence. And if each one of us is able to refine and purify and elevate and transform our animal soul, ultimately, the whole of existence gets elevated and transformed. That's why in the images of the time of Mashiach, the time of the Messiah, that are described by figures, prophets like Isaiah, he describes a change in nature, the way in which a child will be able to play with the nest, will put his hand into the nest of a viper or play with a scorpion and will not be harmed in any way. Because when the animal dimension of all of us together is refined and elevated, this elevates the animal dimension, which means the basic earthly dimension of the whole of existence, including the animals and the birds and the microbes, and everything becomes something positive instead of having so much propensity for the negative. So how does the animal soul inside each individual get transformed? Through the effort of the divine soul. But the divine soul also has an effort on its own account. And so this is what it means to sow the mind and the emotions of the divine soul in the animal soul, because the mind and emotions of the divine soul, as they are in themselves, they cannot change the animal soul. They won't change it. They won't affect it. They're too divine. They're too holy. They're on a higher level. In order that they should have an effect on the animal soul, it's through them descending and being enclosed in the mind and the emotion of the animal soul. And that's what's called planting. So planting is not just a matter of leaving the seeds. If we go back to the image of planting crops, you don't just put the seeds on the ground. You have to dig a furrow, and then in the furrow you plant the seeds. The seeds have to be in the earth. So the divine soul and the inspiration of the divine soul and the wisdom and the discovery of the divine soul has to impregnate our animal soul and be integrated within the animal soul. And like Agnes said, in terms of modulation theory, it's the way in which it enters into the reality of our own being. Because it's very easy for a person to be split, that their real being is like the animal dimension. And then they're a very spiritual person. There was a great Hasidic Rebbe called the Kotzke Rebbe, Rebbe Nachum Mendel of Kotzk. And so once one of his students was talking with another student of another Hasidic leader. So the Kotzke Rebbe's student said to the other person, "Your Rebbe talks about heaven, and my Rebbe talks about your belly button." In other words, the Kotzke Rebbe talks about the real self of the person. Your Rebbe talks about, very nice spiritual things, being holy. But my Rebbe talks about the belly button. And that's really what this expression, what this teaching is expressing. The idea that the divine soul has to get involved with the animal soul, and that when it feels love for God, it's not just a sublime divine love. It's a love which is there, the libido of the animal soul itself, loving God. And one can suggest, says the Rebbe, that in a similar way with Torah and mitzvot in general, learning Torah and keeping mitzvot, shebichdei sheyeh chayut b'Torah u'mitzvot, in order that there should be a real life force in study of Torah and keeping mitzvah, who shekiyuma Torah mitzvah, it's that the keeping of this Torah and mitzvah, who ba'ava v'yira, is with love and with awe, true heartfelt emotion. U'bichdei she'al yedei ahava v'yira d'neshama, in order that from the love and awe of the divine soul, there should be a life energy in the action of the mitzvah. And through this, they will ascend above. The Torah mitzvah will ascend above because you do them with excitement and enthusiasm. And that is through yiridatam v'itzapshutam ba'asiyah. It's through the fact that the love and the concern that is there in a spiritual sense enters into the actual practical doing of the mitzvot, whatever it is, and it's filled with that energy. And so therefore, keeping Torah mitzvot of the person is also called sowing, planting. And that's another example of what is meant by Isaac planting. Now, according to this, that the service of Isaac planting is actually planting the energy of his divine soul in the keeping of mitzvah and the sifting of the animal soul, which means elevating the animal soul, that the animal soul becomes refined. So one has to say that the finding of a hundredfold produce, as it says, this is not just something which comes from above because the person keeps the Torah mitzvah. That hundredfold is that the divine soul itself is magnified through the fact that it put its energy into keeping this mitzvah and in sifting the animal soul. Then the divine soul itself grows in an extraordinary way. Now, let's just stop at this point. I remember it used to intrigue me very much. Why is it that these spiritual teachings of Judaism, these profound teachings, become expressed in what might seem to be very simple practical activities? Eat kosher, keep Shabbat, you know, which means do this on Shabbat, don't do that, putting on tefillin, and so on. We're talking here about such spiritual things in general, in Jewish thought. Why is action so significant? So I remember once hearing a talk. This was before I was Chabad. I didn't study Chabad teachings at that point, but I did read a lot of Jewish material. And I remember hearing a Chabad speaker, and he quoted an image from the first Lubavitch Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman. Incidentally, it's got an engineering side to it. He describes the lever, the way in which one uses a lever, and the words used in this 18th century or early 19th century text is precisely that in Hebrew letters, the word lever. That if you're trying to lift up a load, a considerable load, you have to put the lever at the bottom of the load, the lowest point, and then you heave upwards. You're able to, you've got a fulcrum and you put the end of the lever under the thing you're trying to lift, and then you've got a fulcrum and then it lifts, and it lifts up the thing. If you don't put the end of the lever at the bottom of the pile, you'll only lift up part of it. You have to go right to the lowest point. And so this was an explanation why it's the practical mitzvot which are so important, because they are, as it were, the lowest point within the system of a person, what we eat, what we drink, and other aspects of our lives. And then that is lifted up. Here, there's a further dimension to this. It's giving here, and that was very satisfying to me. And made a lot of sense, and that's why practical mitzvot, practical laws are so important. I carried that for many years. Here in this discourse, it's giving another dimension. In order that the divine and spiritual dimension of ourselves should reach its own highest level of fulfillment, it's by the fact that it can enter down the lowest level. Now, that reminds me of another aspect which you could link with knowledge of science or mathematics. One can have a very, very subtle idea. But the key to one really understanding that idea in a very deep way includes, or maybe consists, in one being able to communicate the idea on a very simple level. And it's the ability to communicate on that simple level, which very often that's the key to that idea becoming something very meaningful in people's lives, even though it starts off as something extremely subtle. So that is the benefit that the divine soul experiences through the fact that it invests itself in communicating. The first step in communication is within ourselves, that the divine soul communicates something very profound in our inner being, in our animal being. And through that, the divine soul itself is elevated. So therefore, we have to go down in order to elevate the animal soul. We have to go to the lowest level, the practical level of the animal soul. But also, in order to elevate the divine soul has to be able to reach down to the lowest point of the animal soul. So these are two aspects which relate to our personal development. The divine soul in ourselves achieving its own highest potential and its effect on the animal soul and the world. And the intriguing concept here is that both of these are linked. It's by the fact that the animal soul reaches down into the lowest level, that's the way that it itself attains something very exalted and spiritual. Does anyone have any comment on that? Okay, let's go back.
Rabbi Tally?
Yes, Jeffrey.
Sorry. If the human doesn't respond, the neshama is elevated, but what happens when the person doesn't adhere?
You mean the divine soul is trying to get the animal soul to do something, and the problem is that the animal soul doesn't respond. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you said that the neshama is elevated. But if the person isn't responding.
So the person, it's the same person, you mean? The neshama in the person is trying to get the animal soul to be inspired, but the animal soul doesn't get inspired.
Right. Nevertheless, it's elevated the neshama.
I'm not so sure. If the neshama is not successful, if the divine soul is not successful in integrating with the animal soul, you see, if you say the person isn't moved, or the person goes on doing what they were doing, and, you know, it's a nice book, it's a nice story, it's a nice, it's a nice idea, but I'm going to go on doing what I was doing before. And so that means the divine hasn't affected. The planting hasn't worked. It sowed the seed, but nothing happened, which can be the case. So there is a saying, words, dvarim hayotzim me'alev, nichnasim el'alev. Words which come from the heart go into the heart. Now that idea means that if the person's animal soul is not listening to the divine soul, it means the divine soul isn't working hard enough. If the divine soul was able to reach into its own inner being in a more true way, then it can enter into the animal soul and actually have an effect on the animal soul. Now,
right.
To be very honest, you have described what is the general problem for most people, including myself, is exactly that gap. How do we bridge that gap? And there are all kinds of ways of trying to do it in this way and trying to do it in that way. There's study, there's different experiences, there's a person goes to the west wall of the temple, a person goes to the grave of the Lubama Tredemba, a person is inspired by music, art, all different ways in which we are trying to reach this animal dimension, which stubbornly persists in having certain animal aspects to it. And we try. And we try. So you've made a very good, honest point. And so the answer is that we have to keep trying.
Keep going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Keep going.
Chikoya.
Yeah.
Now, another mitzvah.
Yeah. Now, we now come into an interesting section of this discourse. We've all heard, I think, of the Chamishim Sha'arei Bina, the 50 gates of understanding. And so this idea, the 50 gates of understanding, are going to come into the picture over here. Let's see. Now, it explains in the discourse that the hundredfold, the 100 gates, you see, now that's an interesting thing. What I've been translating as a hundredfold in Hebrew is actually 100 gates. So it's now the word gate in Hebrew relates to measure as well. So you could translate gate as measure, but like 100 measures. So that's why we can say it. It's 100-fold. It's 100 times that measure. Like if it was 1 sack, it's 100 sacks. But the actual word is gate. Now these gates relate to the 50 gates of understanding twice. 2 times 50 is 100. Because in the realm of understanding, that means bina, which means understanding, there are two levels. One aspect is the power of understanding in itself. And the other is not its own power of understanding, but what it can affect others, the way that it can affect others. And so that's the 50 of understanding itself, 50 the way it affects others, and that's 100. Now, the meaning of these 50 gates of understanding, now, a gate is generally at the end of the courtyard. You know, if you imagine a, you know, like a nice house or the temple, let's say. You've got the temple, and then you've got a courtyard of the temple, and then you've got the gate, which goes outside. Or you could have not the temple, you know, but a nice mansion, a big house with grounds. And there at the end of the grounds, at the front of the house, there is a gate. Now, this relates also to the 50 gates of understanding. They are at the lowest level of the power of understanding. And it's through them that the intellect, which comes from understanding, is able to flow into the emotions. Because in order to get the intellect into the emotions, it has to leave the realm of intellect. Now, many fascinating teachings have been written in Chabad thought. Some of them are in the bookcase behind me, explaining this process. That you have something which is in the mind, and from the mind it has to enter the heart. And the point where it enters the heart, in a sense, is where it leaves the mind. So it comes from the mind, but it has to be injected into the heart, and then it becomes something which is emotional rather than cerebral. Now, these aspects of these 50 gates of understanding, times two, the gates of understanding relating to understanding in itself, and the gates of understanding as it flows into the emotions. So all that together, there we have the this concept of this hundredfold. But if we divide it into 2 times 50, there is the 50 gates which relate to the emotion. In other words, like we said before, the divine soul affecting the animal soul. And then there's the way the divine soul is just itself connecting with the divine. And that's another 50 gates. So there's the 50 gates above and the 50 gates below. And so these, this kind of flow which takes place, so we've got the idea that there's the soul reaching above and the soul flowing down below. Then he gives another example. We have the 10 Sfirot. And there is a verse in the daily prayers. Lecha Hashem Agdula Vagvura Vatiferet. To you, God, is the greatness and the power and the splendor and the Netzach, the victory and the Hod, the submission, because everything in heaven and earth is yours. Now, this verse, which is recited in the morning prayers every day, this verse is really hinting at all the 10 Sfirot. And it goes through them. Gudula, greatness, means kindness. And then there's Gvura, which is severity, and so on. And at the beginning of the verse, it says, Lecha, to you, O God. Now, the word Lecha in numerical terms in Gematria is 50. Lamed is 30, Kaf is 20, so that's 50. Similarly, Kol at the end, Ki Chol Bashamayim Uba'aretz, that word is also numerical value 50, 20, and 30. So we have the idea at the beginning, the 50, the aspect in which each one of them relates above, and at the end, the way in which they relate below. So all the time, there is this dual dimension of the way in which the person is reaching above to a spiritual level beyond, and then drawing that spiritual level into their own inner being. As the Kotzke Rebbe put it, to one's belly button. So there's the mind reaching exalted heights, and there's also flowing down into one's belly button, making one's belly button have a different quality. And that's where you get this chap with his delightful laugh, which showed an integration of all the different aspects of his being in my, you know, as I romantically understood it and told him. Now, so there we have these, so there we have this combination of the 2 times 50. Those 2 times 50, the divine soul, the power of understanding reaching higher and higher, and the way in which it impregnates and inspires downwards. So that is also 50 going above, 50 going below, and they become the hundredfold. So you see what we're doing through this discourse. We're reading Isaac's activity in planting and reaping and gaining a hundredfold in the crops. It's all something happening inside us. And so that's the way in which our emotions have a very exalted source. And yet they also have to go down into our into our tangible emotions and inspire these emotions. So and then we come. So we're skipping out a lot. It's quite a long discourse. So then we come to not just the hundredfold that he reaps, but also God blessing him, right? So he reaps a hundredfold, and God blessed him, like a second statement, and he became greater and greater. So the fact that he became greater and greater shows us it's not talking just about physical crops and selling the crops. It's talking about something else. And so we've understood this hundredfold in this sort of dimension of the divine soul reaching above and then flowing below. So there's 50 at each stage. And so that becomes the hundredfold. But then we have the idea of God blessing him. That's even higher than the hundredfold. And that relates to what it says in the Midrash. When God appoints a person to an exalted position, first of all, God tests the person. Similarly, you find with Abraham, our patriarch, our father, God tested him with 10 tests. The sages go through 10 tests he was tested with, and the final one being the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. And he stood through all these tests, and then God blessed him. As it says, God blessed Abraham with everything. That was at the beginning of last week's sermon. Similarly, Isaac was tested, and he too withstood these tests, and then God blessed him. And that's how he is able to sow in this land and not just find a hundredfold produce. He's also getting a special blessing from the divine. And so then the very in Hasidic teachings, it explains the source of this blessing in higher and higher spiritual levels. And so the blessing which comes is at the point where our own divine service doesn't reach. Our divine service, our being good, quote unquote, our being trying to live up to good things, has a certain spiritual effect, a very important spiritual effect. And that's what we have of reaping the hundredfold and achieving the hundredfold and the divine soul flowing into the animal soul. All that's something a person is able to do. But all that is something which, in a sense, is under the person's own control. And then you have a level which is higher. And the level which is higher is a kind of divine gift which comes to the person. And that's this blessing that comes to Isaac. So he made these efforts that it's been mapping out over here. The way the divine soul, the Torah mitzvot, connecting with the animal soul, injecting the animal soul, impregnating the animal soul, inspiring the animal soul. And that's all something relatively that we are able to attempt, not necessarily totally within our control, but we can certainly try. And then there's a dimension of being blessed by God, which is even higher. And that's the nature of our relationship with the divine, that we get this absolute transcendent blessing flowing as well, and we should be able to appreciate that. And the fact that we, the Jewish people in the land of Israel, have had the most incredible blessing from God in the most tangible way seen in the Six-Day War, and then where we conquered all this territory, thank God, and that we have to appreciate the fact that we are given that territory as a blessing from the divine. And therefore we have to, and also it is necessary for our strategic safety and security. I'm not sure if the people of this group are aware, but the terrible tragedy that happened on October the 7th was begun in 2005 when Israel unilaterally left Gaza. Israel had control of Gaza in order to prevent exactly what is happening today. And unfortunately, due to internal politics in Israel, the Prime Minister of Israel then decided to leave Gaza, that the Israeli forces would come out of Gaza and give Gaza independence. And unfortunately, immediately Gaza turned into a hostile force, was taken over by Hamas 3 years later, and has just become worse and worse and worse till we have the current situation that's, of course, funded by other countries as well, by Iran and so on. But it's but that was something that we could have prevented. So let's hope we don't make the same mistake again. So there is what we can try to do, what we can try to achieve with our own effort. And then there's blessing that God gives us. And that blessing is something that we should try to recognize and appreciate. And then we go into the next part of these few verses, where it says that the man became very great, and he became greater and greater until he was very great indeed. It says it three times. Now, what are the three times greatness? And you could say that it corresponds to planting, finding, and being blessed. And so that means there's first of all the flow, which comes according to the level of what we put into it. That's the planting. We put a certain effort into it, and we get a response. And that is the divine radiance, which on a certain level, the immanent radiance. Then there is a flow which comes on a higher level, which is a response, but it's a response from above, commensurate with our efforts. And that's Vayimtso, that's what we get, that's the transcendent radiance. So that's the immanent radiance and the transcendent radiance. I'm sorry about these sort of technical terms. And then it says that he was getting bigger and bigger. And then the third time that he's very, very great. And that is the flow from the point which cannot be reached by our efforts at all. That's the point where God blesses us. And that is the flow, not just of the radiance, not the immanent radiance, not the transcendent radiance, but the absolute essence. And that essence is what is revealed ultimately. And that is a connection with the divine beyond any definitions on an incredibly powerful level. And that's how our discourse concludes. So
thanks, Rebbe.
It's been very special exploring this together with you. It's a very beautiful discourse. And I hope we all gained something from it. As mentioned in my second email, there won't be a session next week. With the help of God, my wife and I will be making a trip to Melbourne, Australia, for the wedding of one of our granddaughters. This is a granddaughter who phoned me up a few years ago from Australia. She said, can we learn Tanya together? And from then on, for a couple of years, we would try, despite the big time difference to Australia, we would try and study Tanya almost every weekday. And so she's a very special girl, and we hope to be at her wedding. So next week, that's the 21st of November, there won't be a session. Even if I could manage on Zoom, the time difference makes it extremely difficult. So this would be in the early morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that. So it doesn't really work. But with the help of God, the 21st of November, we'll be back here. And we'll be able to study again together. So wishing everyone everything good. And thank you very, very much for joining. And all the very best.
And a mazel tov.
Thank you very much, and mazel tov. Have a safe trip.
Thank you, mazel tov,
granddaughter, and thank safe you. Trip, Tali, and thank you for your inspiring words always. Thank you.
Thank you. All the best, and best to each one of you. Very special seeing you. Lovely seeing you, Agnes. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you very much. All the best, Tali. Yes. Bye.
All the best. Bye. Bye. Bye, Maureen and Steve. Bye. Very special.
Bye, Rabbi Tali.
Bye, Gloria. Bye, sir.
Thank
bye.
You,
Tali.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mazel tov, and have a great trip.
Thank you.
Mazel tov.
Yeah. Okay. All the best.